This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, New Orleans, on another dreary day. And hopefully this will end soon because this has not been fun. I want to shout out congratulations to University of New Orleans basketball team last night. I attended one of my friend's sons plays on the UNO team. Scott Plaisance had a big game last night. They beat Southeast Louisiana. Had a lot of fun. President John Nicklow was out there. Want to thank him for his hospitality as well. It was a great game, and all of these college teams are coming to the end of their season, so and about ready to enter into March Madness, which is one of the my favorite times of the year to watch college basketball. In the last hour, we're going to talk about two different things. One, Take 'Em Down NOLA's requested of Zulu to stop the blackface custom. The Zulu organizers continue to say that the intent and context of what they do has nothing to do with the blackface minstrel shows that were popular during the late 1800s and early 1900s that were disrespectful to that race. And so we'll see where this controversy leads us. In the second hour, we're talking to Kevin Dolio, the director of aviation at the Louis Armstrong International Airport, a platinum star year out there, 8 straight years of growth. They continue to set new records. Can we keep the growth going? A new airport terminal building is going to open about midpoint of this year, and we'll get the update on that and where he sees the traffic moving as it relates to the number of passengers going through Louis Armstrong International Airport. In this hour, we're going to talk about another caravan. A lot of misinformation being put out there. And Todd Bensman, who joins us from the Center for Immigration Studies, Texas-based senior national security fellow. Todd was out there in a number of the facilities, had put eyes on it. And what he saw and what's been talked about in the national media don't seem to line up. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Todd, I understand that you just got back from visiting the border. We're out at a ceramics factory where a lot of folks, old ceramics factory, I should say, where up to 2,000 people had flowed through that facility. What was the status of that, and what did you see in relation to what's being reported nationally?
When I arrived, they were in the middle of a drawdown trying to remove and bus away the 1,900 migrants that had originally arrived the week before. And what was happening was that the Mexican government had decided to close the factory and remove the population from Piedras Negras, which is just across the river from Eagle Pass, and move that population to other Mexican cities. The way that they were doing this is that they instituted a visa granting program that is kind of like the humanitarian visas, in the sense that they would give migrants a chance to live and work in Mexico for up to a year, and then they could renew that if they wanted to. And then they would put them on buses and ship them to, you know, any number of northern Mexico cities. So when I was there, I was watching them do this drawdown. They had long lines for applications for the visas. Then they had another long line for people who were being selected to go on the bus. And they had a bus there to Monterrey, Mexico, and another line for that bus to Monterrey, Mexico. So as of yesterday, that camp closed. And they moved between Thursday and yesterday, a very short period of time, about 1,400 migrants out of there. And so that's what I witnessed. That's one of the things that I witnessed going on there that had not been reported previously.
Todd,
the problem with that, the initial
stories were that these were deplorable conditions in this old ceramics factory, is what was being reported, and that's what was causing some unrest. And then there were other stories that were filed that said that that wasn't true.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to keep in mind that the migrants were unexpectedly detained in this facility. The Mexicans put them in there for our benefit so that there wouldn't be some kind of a mass rush on the river, and that these migrants wanted out immediately. It was an unexpected, and also their allies on the outside, you know, the migrant assistance groups, the advocacy groups, also were saying and doing whatever they had to force the Mexicans to open the gates and let them go out so that they could make the rush on the river. So in order to do that, they kind of came up with this narrative that conditions were absolutely, that they were living in terrible deprivation and unsanitary conditions without any of their basic needs being met. And what I saw was exactly the opposite of that. All needs were being met and being met very well. Not only were they getting their three squares, but they also had heating inside. It's a little chilly out there this time of the year. They had big screen televisions and all the facilities that were connected to Netflix. So you could watch Netflix shows, free Wi-Fi, medical access to medical attention and doctors and dentists. They even had entrepreneurs setting up little kind of tabletop convenience stores in there, little shops. It was not anything like the reporting that came out earlier. So I was a witness to that. I reported that and was pretty flamed for it, too.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that there's always this false dialogue that's being created to try and make the conditions seem worse than they are for the purposes of the advocacy groups trying to force the Mexican government to take alternative measures so that they can rush the border. And ultimately, in this case, that's what happened. They ended up busing them to the border. Is that correct?
What's actually happening is that they're being bused under the guise of going to work in other Mexican cities and staying in Mexico. But the reality is that none of them want to stay in Mexico. So they're all completely free to step off the bus in Monterrey or Hermosillo or wherever they're being bused to and just turn north and go straight to that border. And it'll be in smaller groups that you and I never see and that the American public doesn't notice because they just join the regular migration going over the border to take advantage of the catch and release loophole.
Yeah. Todd, when we come back, I want to talk about the National Emergency Declaration, where we are in the court, and where do you see this thing ultimately ending, if any time soon? We got to get to a break. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we're talking to Todd Bensman, Center for Immigration Studies. Todd, there's been a lot of back and forth on whether or not the declaration of a national emergency was appropriate action taken by the president. And we sometimes don't put numbers in their proper context. And the most recent reports out of the Customs and Border Patrol is that they had over 550,000 total enforcement actions at the border. And that's just when they put hands on people, and that number doesn't take into account those that successfully crossed the border that they don't even know about, right?
Well, yeah. Of course, you know, that the latter number, which is the denominator of the fraction, nobody ever really knows. You just have sort of a best guesstimate. But what we do know is that most of those who are coming across the border these days are Central American families. And those families are not seeking to evade Border Patrol. They're seeking out Border Patrol.
Right.
And why would they do that? They're seeking out Border Patrol so that they can declare asylum and access our catch and release loophole, and then they're into the country. So I think that 500,000 plus is probably fairly accurate, just
right,
given the nature of who's coming across and why.
But they are catching folks in between the ports of entry. And I guess what you're saying is they're coming across in between ports of entry and then seeking out Border Patrol in many cases, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I would say that's a main tactic.
And that way they get through the process. They don't have to go through the dangers of crossing a rancher's property and having confrontations with U.S. citizens that, as they move across trying to get to the main travel portion or main travel highways that run east-west along the border.
Yeah, that's right. They'll cross, and then they'll just sit there and wait.
Yep.
Look for a Border Patrol agent, and they just say the magic words, "I declare asylum," or "we want asylum." And as you know, that, you know, sets up the process where we can't hold them anywhere, so we just say, "You're released. Good luck."
You know, when we think about, and I keep hearing in the media, well, this, you know, the numbers have gone down a little bit. These numbers are actually up over 2017, but numbers fluctuate up, down annually all the time. Does that make it any less of an emergency? I mean, it could still be an emergency, but not a priority for who sits in the office of the presidency, correct?
Yeah, it's entirely within the decision-making authority and the judgment of a sitting president to decide what's an emergency. In 2000, when we were having a million plus migrants being apprehended at the border, this is a flood. I would call that just an extreme, major, extreme emergency. What we're seeing now is just merely a terrible emergency.
So when we think about not just bodies, but we think about drugs, because this has been bannered about as well. You know, we recently made one of the largest fentanyl seizures ever at the border, enough to kill, I forgot how many people. It was an incredible number. At a Texas port the other day, they found $13 million worth of methamphetamine hidden in a frozen strawberry trailer that came across the Mexican border. And then, you know, this just happened a couple of weeks ago in the state of Veracruz in Mexico, a Mexican businesswoman was kidnapped, and they asked for a $200,000 ransom. The family couldn't come up with the money. They decapitated the woman and left her on, you know, someplace in a bag with a note saying, you know, the husband thought he was going to play big guy and not pay the money, and this is what happens. So when we think about these types of issues in relation to the border wall and in relation to aggressive law enforcement at the southern border, I continue to say the state of the union in Mexico is in such disarray in many respects that I think in and of itself begs of us to have a heightened awareness of what we're doing at the southern border.
Yeah, and I agree. And what you'll hear the anti-borders advocates often say is that, why are you worried about a wall and between ports of entry when most of the dangerous drugs are coming in over the ports of entry? And the response to that is, this is not an either-or proposition. We don't have to focus on the ports of entry enforcement to the exclusion of the enforcement of between ports of entry. There's room for both. In fact, I would argue that it's a necessity that we take measures that improve the security at the ports of entry and between them. But the way it's played all the time is, oh, well, all the serious drugs are coming through the ports of entry, which, by the way, is not true. But nevertheless, if we're traffic copping, we can enforce speeding laws and DUI laws at the same time. What's preventing that?
Right.
Of course we should.
Well, you know, they ask for more scanning, more capabilities at the ports of entry. If you put more pressure at the ports of entry, the drug traffickers go to the point of least resistance. They know that they can successfully get drugs across the ports of entry right now because they're inundated at those ports. But if, as you place more security measures there, it's just common sense. They're going to go to other areas where they don't have that much resistance.
Right. And I think fencing plays a role. Walling barriers play a significant role in all of that sort of funneling action, finding paths of least resistance. Where you have walls, they go to where there's no walls. I mean, to me, this is just, it's common sense. I'm not sure why there are segments of our thinking population that somehow can't seem to get that.
Well, after 40 years in law enforcement, I mean, none of this surprises me. I mean, we see this all the time. You put pressure in one neighborhood, it goes to a different neighborhood. So you have to go back over there and still maintain where you just left with some assets and resources to make sure that they don't come back to that other neighborhood. I mean, we've dealt with that in law enforcement strategies forever. So it's mind-boggling to me that our leaders in Congress can't seem to get their hands around these particular issues.
Right. And, you know, I think what's going to happen, you mentioned earlier about the president's declaration. It's going to get challenged in court, just like he said.
Yeah.
And it'll go through to the Supremes, and maybe in about a year we'll have some funding.
Hopefully so. Hopefully it goes faster than that. Todd Bensman, Center for Immigration Studies, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate your insight.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. Todd periodically goes down to the southern border and goes all through Central America to see what's actually happening real time on the ground as opposed to just reporting from afar. So we appreciate his insight. We'll be right back. On a Blue Runner opinion poll, are you surprised there is another caravan? 93% of the respondents say no. Number of questions about text. Please ask your guests if they're seeing a dramatic drop in cannabis smuggling now that it's legal in many states. So I'm looking at the data that's provided by Customs and Border Patrol for fiscal year 2018. There was 439,531 pounds of marijuana seized at the border. Now, that's down from 2012. In 2012, there was 2.2 million pounds. In 2013, 2.4 million. 2014, 1.9 million. 15 was 1.5 million. 16 was 1.2 million. Last in 17 was 800,000, almost 900,000 pounds, and then 439,000 pounds in 2018. Interestingly, though, cocaine and heroin, the numbers have been bouncing back and forth, and methamphetamine has been bouncing all over the place. In fact, in 2012, 3,715 pounds of meth at the border, and that's a lot of meth, folks. In 2018, three times as much, over 10,000 pounds of methamphetamines seized at the border. Heroin has been running anywhere between... In 2012, was 430 pounds of heroin, 532 pounds in 2018. And in 2017, there were 900 pounds, just over 900 pounds of heroin seized at the border. Cocaine in 2012 had 12,000 pounds of cocaine and 6,400 pounds in 2018. And that had dropped to 4,000 pounds in 2013, it was 4,500 pounds in 2014, and jumped up to 11,000 in 2015. You know, a lot of this all depends on what's going on in the market, on the demand. Fentanyl, for example, is kind of a new phenomenon. In fact, in 2012, 13, 14, and 15, and 16, no seizures at all at the border. In 2017, 181 pounds of fentanyl, and in 2018, 332 pounds of fentanyl. You're talking about a drug that could be as much as, over 100 times as potent as heroin, depending on how it's cut. Now, when we talked about the numbers coming in, and let's put this in its context, the numbers of folks that they have actually caught at the border is north of 500,000 people. That's about the size of the city of Atlanta every year. In 2016, it was 690,000. In 2017, 526,000. And in 2018, 566,000. So in a three-year period of time, you're basically talking about 1.7, 1.8 million people. But in 2018 alone, basically the city of Atlanta is what you are dealing with in this particular case. And whether you're a pro-immigration policy or anti-immigration policy, these are folks that are coming across that have an issue that are not going necessarily through the appropriate channels in order to gain access into this country through our immigration system. Trying to exploit this catch and release, trying to exploit the frailties of what we're dealing with. And if for some reason people don't believe that a population the size of the city of Atlanta coming in here every year and are not showing up in court and are not resolving their immigration issues because they come here illegally is not a crisis, I don't know what is. The numbers are staggering. Yes, they may be less than they were in 2000 where they had over a million. It was just a bigger crisis then than it is today, but it still remains a crisis. And the challenge today is unlike it was back then where it wasn't families. It was predominantly individual males coming across the border. Today, the challenge is even greater. It's kids, families, and that's why you have the family separation and everything else. And part of that issue does go to a zero tolerance policy, but I never understood why the rule of law is something that we should not all advocate for. When you think about all of the issues that we face day in and day out, why would we want to circumvent and walk the right around the rule of law? We are all held to a standard. Why would we not want to hold these folks to a standard? You know, and it's amazing the rhetoric and the dialogue that's put out there by many on the left. And that's why I had asked Todd to come on, because I saw this story many a times about this ceramics factory that was set up by the Mexican government in the town of Pedros Negros. And, you know, in fact, ironically, the mayor of that town went on the news and said, I certainly hope that Congress reaches some kind of bipartisan, overarching immigration policy because their inability to do so is really making it untenable for us in Mexico. Now, go figure that one out. We want to know what you're thinking. 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. We'll be right back. We'll go to the talk lines when we return. This is Newell on WWL. We're back. We're talking about the most recent caravan at the border and some of the trials and tribulations of the immigration policy. You know, in this compromise bill that was reached, one of the big issues that the Democrats were pushing initially was a reduction in the amount of the detention bed space, because they knew that with reduced detention bed space, there was no deterrence. Deterrence is the fear of apprehension and detention, two parts. And if you weren't going to be detained and you reduce the number of detention beds, that means that more people would be on the catch and release program. Once you hit our soil, we catch you, process you, release you, give you a court date. And we have talked many times statistically about how many people show up for their court date. Not a lot. And so they just hot out in the society of America, in some cases, never to be found again. Number of texts coming in asking us how many illegals are actually in the country. They really haven't been able to put their finger on that issue. Most people say 11 or 12 million. Some say it could be as high as 20 to 22 million. I've heard the 20 million number going back 4 years, 5 years. But you don't know what you don't know. When people are coming across the border, you don't really know how many are coming across. You only know about the ones that you catch. The numbers run all over the place, and we really don't have truly a valid notion of how many people are actually here. These are guesstimates at best. They try to do it scientifically, but still, we don't know what we don't know. Let's go to line one, talk to Joe in Biloxi. What say you, Joe?
Hey, Sheriff. How are you today?
Doing great.
Good. Sheriff, you know, I know, it's all about votes. The Democrats control the House. They want those votes. But let me ask you this question. And they also say, well, you know, building this wall is really not going to deter these people from, you know, from coming into the country. But let me ask you this question. Sorry, I'm walking. I'm a little tired. But if I've got a house, two houses in your neighborhood, and I got burglar bars on one house, and I don't have burglar bars on the other house, which house do you think a burglar is going to go into?
Well, obviously, the one that's the path of least resistance, the one without the burglar bars.
Okay, and it's the same thing with the wall. If you got a wall put up, they're not going to cross that area. So.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt that for political purposes, the symbolism around the wall has, been just characterized as something that it never was intended to be. And it's not a panacea solution. It's not going to eliminate everything. That's just not the purpose of the wall. The purpose is one in a series of impediments, whether it be technology or physical structures, to try and catch people coming across the border illegally. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not one impediment that's going to make the difference. It's a series of impediments and a series of strategies that need to be deployed in order to create a more secure environment at the border. They know that. The members of Congress know that. I agree with you. This has become a political issue, one in which each side believes is a winner for them. Forget about whether it's a winner for the country. This is about whether it's a winner for the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And meanwhile, you know, we are the ones that are suffering the ills of the activities, illegal and otherwise, that go on at the southern border, as well as the immigrants themselves. And we fail to recognize that our frailties in our policy is what's putting these people in the position that they are in, and our inability to take the appropriate action in administratively dealing with this problem day in and day out. And not unlike other issues, we're the ones that are suffering while they're playing their silly ass games in D.C.
Right. And what's it going to take? Is it going to take for some illegal immigrant to hurt or kill one of these Democrats themselves or even their family?
No, I mean, that's not what it's going to take. It is going to take you and me and everybody to call on members of Congress to swallow a reality pill.
No, because they're not going to do that.
Well, they will if you start voting them out of office. That's how you do it.
You will if you start
voting them out of office. And, you know, when you look at just what happened yesterday or the day before yesterday, not to bring up AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez again, but a billboard goes up thanking her for nothing as it relates to the company that wanted to move there and what they were doing with the number of jobs. And that was the point I was trying to make, the number of jobs and everything that's on the bill. And now she's all upset because that's right in her backyard. And, the facts are, until it's right in their backyard and you put it front and center on their nose, they're not doing anything. Joe, thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back. We're back, and we've been talking about whether or not you are surprised that there is another caravan at the border yet again. And are you surprised that there's misinformation about it as well? Obviously, we can't get to the truth of the matter ever as it relates to this. And the vote is that 94% of you are not surprised that there's yet another one. This catch and release as a motivator for these caravans are, it's not going to go away. And if this caravan is successful in getting across the border and getting into the U.S., and there's a lack of detention beds, and they find out that the catch and release is back in play again, don't be surprised by having more and more caravans. And I know what you're going to ask me. Well, how are they going to find out? Folks, all of the immigration advocacy groups are down there publicizing all of this and encouraging the start of new caravans one after the other. That's why they went after the ceramics factory. That's why I'm talking about this today. They were talking about the deplorable conditions in this old ceramics factory that was set up by the Mexican government in order to process these folks to try and assimilate them into the Mexican population. That's not what they wanted, because these people actually want to get to the U.S. So what did they do? They start putting out a dialogue that said that it was deplorable inside. Todd Benson went down there to see it. Netflix on big screen TVs, internet, medical service available. They did have a couple of riots in there initially, conducted by gang members from Honduras, and they succeeded in closing that camp.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.